This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
This is the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a tradition that started way back in 1979 when this station signed on. We're at the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studio. Everybody's kind of bullying us right now. They want to push us out because bid for bargain starting.
We've got a full hour, though, before they get to push us out. So stop being mean to us.
I said, hold your horses, man. This is the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. Did he ever get back to us? Is he going to go to the state tournament next year?
I hope he does.
So do you want to begin with kind of, I guess, basketball season over, anything stand out? Last week, I'm assuming like 99.9% of the state is absolutely ecstatic that Belleville Altoff got beat in the state title game, yes or no?
I'm excited, and I texted this to Alex Johnson. By the way, congratulations to him on being named the Sherrard High School principal officially. But I texted him on Saturday during the 2A state title game was wrapping up, and I said, hey, man, congrats on the Transitive Property State Championship. And he texted me right back, and he said, do we get to hang a banner for that? Of course, we talked about last week with Sherrard. They ended up being the only 2A team all season that beat the 2A state champs Dyett. So congrats to Coach Jamal Gill. I had the chance to talk with him Saturday. That interview online at WRMJ.com. Awesome for them. Chicago Public League representative to win the 2A state title. But yes, I think everybody's happy that Altoff lost because they're like the number one on the most hated list around the state, I feel like. But also, if they would have won, it would have been a clean sweep of four private school state champions, because 1A was Hope Academy, 3A DePaul Prep, 4A Bennett Academy.
Yeah, and we'll get into kind of what the IHSA announced earlier this week. Well, actually, it was from the board meeting last Saturday, and they announced it earlier this week. But I like you say transitive properties. So you learned that from the Mercer County
math
class. So vote yes for the referendum on April the 1st. So, you know, too, though, with this Dyett story, which, you know, great that, you know, they played both Rockridge and Sherrard during the regular season. And it was nice to hear the coach, Coach Gill, talk a little bit about that. But I think the other unique story about that, because I know downstate we're always sensitive when we have to play also, you know, a city school in the public league and, you know, talking about an open enrollment or whatever. But that story to me is, come on, man, a school that closed and reopened. And I think the coach, it was awesome, the coach said, hey, I had 10 seniors that stuck around here and they wanted to do something special, because I think the success of Dyett in any sport prior to this past weekend was nil, right?
That's their
first trophy in any sport, and who can't be excited about that?
Kids aren't flocking to Dyett to form a super basketball team. Yeah. I mean, it's a Chicago public league school, but the enrollment is the enrollment, right? I mean, I'll never complain about a public school playing in 2A. Like, even Manual, I heard people complain about them being 2A. That's what it is. I mean, their enrollment fits in the 2A classification, you know, range. That's what they are. They're a public school. I mean, yeah, they're in the Metro Peoria area, and obviously Diet's in the city of Chicago, but, I mean, I don't know what you want. I mean, people complain about private schools. They're public schools, and that's what the enrollment is, so that's what it is. I mean,
well, and I talked to a friend of mine from downstate, and he had a kid playing that was his team lost, I think, in the super sectional round. And even talking to him, and his youngster played at a public school, and he even said, yeah, I know, you know, all of this conversation about Althoff, and I don't necessarily like it either, but, you know, what is it called that we, you know, our kids play in? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He goes, what is it called? He goes, state tournament, with the emphasis on state. So you have to play teams from across the state of Illinois. And there's some real truth to that. But two, Ty, you know, we can talk about population, right, and enrollment. And so people immediately default to that with Chicago Public League basketball. So if it's just about population and enrollment, then why don't they sweep in every sport across the state of Illinois? Well, it's a basketball area of the state, and they're good at that. And it's funny then, what's the complaint with Chicago Public League in football?
Yeah, they shouldn't be in the playoffs.
Exactly. So yeah. they get pinball by teams, and then we're mad because they shouldn't be in the IHSA, you know, high school football playoffs. What do you want,
right,
people? So I'm a little, and I don't know what the answer is to all of this, but again, I'm going to definitely push back on Diet when people say, well, you know, what
are
they?
They're a 2A school.
Yeah, they're a great story to follow. And even I talked to my radio friend, you know, Brian Roosh this week, who covered Eastland for WCCI radio. And there wasn't, you know, really any significant pushback from Eastland losing to Hope Academy, because why? Well, they played during the regular season, and Eastland won that game.
Right.
So, you know, it is, I guess that's why what I'm saying this, I never know what the answer is in the public, private, or non-boundary public conversation. We'll get into that more, because the IHSA hopes I don't think necessarily have a solution, but maybe a better answer, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that too, but I think, like we talked about with Matt Troha last week, with private schools, it's kind of a case-by-case thing for me, where, like, for example, Hope Academy playing, they were in the 1A football playoffs, they were in the 1A basketball postseason. I don't have an issue with them being in 1A, because they play, like, they're a small school. Yes, they're in the city of Chicago, but it's a small school. They play the small school schedule all season long. They're much different than, like, Althoff being in the 1A football playoffs, that, you know, they played basically in football, like, a 7A, 8A schedule all year, and have, you know, multiple Division One, high-level Division One players. That team had no business being in 1A. So I think that it is kind of a case-by-case situation, where sometimes, yes, there is, you know, rightful kind of anger when you see Althoff playing in the 1A football playoffs, or like Montini in 3A in football. Those schools should not be playing at those levels. So I think with what they announced and the changes to that policy, I think they'll kind of take care of things like that really ever happening, I would think, for the most part.
And by the way, just to circle back to last week, I love doing the show. Second year in a row, we've done it at State Farm Center, and the reaction to that. So I think the content was great in having those conversations. Can I bring up another thing that kind of makes me angry this morning? Or
yeah,
not?
Go ahead.
All right, bid for bargains coming up at 9 o'clock, everybody. Is Rusty Dunn going to be in bid for bargains today?
I think,
so good at that,
I don't know.
Man.
I think so.
Okay, good. And he needs to go to the state tournament with us next year. But anyway, will people quit talking about attendance?
No, that'll never happen.
Because the funniest thing, now I hear the argument, let's go back to Peoria. Wait, what? You know, the circumstances are this again, and moving the state tournament back to Champaign wasn't going to be the answer about attendance. It's just not, because everybody wants to long for the years of the 70s and 80s. It's over, again, for a couple reasons. One, the overlap of the sports, where baseball and softball and spring sports didn't overlap back in those days like they do now. And two, youth sports aren't what they were back in that area. Because those kids in junior high and youth, they can't go to the state tournament now because they're playing somewhere.
Right.
And then kids that aren't on the specific teams down there, they're playing. They're usually multi-sport athletes, so they're playing baseball, softball, or track. So they can't go. And I've said this before about the one thing, my only complaint about, and I say this at football too, and I'll say this about basketball. You know, I wish they would have a blind draw at the beginning of each season and say, hey, for the four-class system in basketball, we'll put the four classes in and we draw it. Here's the first session on Thursday, and maybe they'll pull out 3A that'll have to play the 9:30, 11:30 games on Thursday, just like I wish they would do that for football in the 1A through 8A, because I just think it's unfair the small school classes always get hit with those type of start times at the state tournament. But it is what it is, I guess. And again, the IHSA has it right with playing the four state title games on Saturday. The argument is, what happens? How do you configure the Thursday-Friday sessions to get... And again, to me, there is no answer to get the attendance back just because the culture we're in right now. That's my long rant, I guess, on that.
I think the only thing they need to try to fix for Saturday is they just need to get those games started earlier. Mm-hmm. Because... And I disagree with you on the start. I think that the higher classes should play last because those games are much higher quality in terms of talent. I mean, I was talking about this with Matt Troll last week too, and like when you go from watching like 2A, and we covered some really good 2A teams, but when you go from watching like small school basketball year to then watching like the 4A state semi, it's like a completely different sport. I mean, the talent that 100%. Is on the floor with 4A. So I think that the bigger schools should play later because that's, by and large, what people are there to see, and that's where kind of the top players normally are playing too. But nobody's sticking around for a 4A state title game that's going to tip off at 9:30 p.m. And yes, the 3A game went to double overtime, which didn't help. But still, I mean, one game going a little long shouldn't derail you into having the main event of the whole season, which was a great game between Bennett and Warren, tip off at like 9:30 p.m. You're just not going to get people to stick around. And I think attendance-wise, like, they'll never sell out 16,000 seats for the high school basketball state finals in Champaign. It's driven by the teams that get there. There's no general fan, really, that goes anymore. Like, you don't just get people that are going to come for the whole weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, to watch the tournament. You're not going to get 16,000 people to do that, though. And, like, when, you know, 9 of the 16 schools that qualified were private schools, traditionally have a smaller, you know, following. And really, there was no community school other than Eastland that got there, and that's such a small community that they're not going to bring, they can only bring so many people, you know, at a school of under 200 kids and a community of 1500. So that's part of the issue too, is I think the qualifiers, with it being, you know, more and more private schools, it feels like that takes away from the attendance too, because they don't have the kind of community feel behind them. So I don't know. I mean, attendance is what it is. It wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't terrible, I didn't think. Like, Thursday, Friday's never going to be very good. I thought the crowd Saturday was decent for what it was, though. And since they've gone to the four state title games on the Saturday, I think each year that crowd has been pretty good. I mean, all things considered.
All right, so we need to get into the classification, but I was going to ask you the one thing that I thought was interesting that Matt Trauha mentioned last week. He and I'm paraphrasing, he said it's important for us to make sure the games are available over the air TV. And I think he followed that up with, I don't know how much longer that will continue. And that's the other thing of, you know, I remember back in the day, even in the 70s and 80s, where the popularity of watching the games on TV coincided with the attendance, the attendance of people going to the games, where they got both. And now it's been so, the way TV distribution works, it's so tough to figure out, hey, what channel are the games on? And it's like, hey, 8.3, yeah. And your 84-year-old mother's like, what's 8.3? Right. So I think that's going to be an issue moving forward. Do you think that games, you know, that's one thing I guess we need to follow, that games, the state tournament, state final games being you know, over-the-air TV, is that going to go by the wayside? I think it'll be interesting to kind of follow that story.
I think eventually it'll go towards like a streaming exclusive. I mean, you see that in a lot of things like professional sports, collegiate sports. I think eventually it will just be kind of a streaming-only broadcast, I think. I mean, I think that's kind of where everything is headed.
All right. You want to talk about classification?
Yeah, that's pretty big news, especially locally.
So interesting, you know, that the IHSA has gone back to the fixed cutoffs for enrollment, and you can follow at IHSA.org. So for four class, basically the 1A, 2A cutoff is 300. The 2A, 3A cutoff is 700. And, of course, the classification for, you know, the football playoffs are basically determined with the 256 qualifiers on that Saturday when the pairings are announced. But two, you know, to me, it looks like the day of the waiver for the non-boundary schools, to me, it looks like basically it's kind of over. Now, you still can get it, but if you have any type of limited success in the postseason, you're not going to get that 1.6 waiver multiplied. And then, you know, basically the success factor, if you get a state trophy over a rolling three-year period, that's basically finishing first through fourth, you're going to be bumped up. So a lot of the schools that, you know, are perennial powers, you're going to see them bumped up. Yeah. Classification, you like kind of what the IHSA did, or do you think there is any other maneuverability? Because I thought, you know, last week when we were talking down there, one of the things when we mentioned, you know, kind of the football enrollment from back in the day where we spoke a lot about the average enrollment of your schedule, whether you're a public school or a non-boundary school, that maybe that's a fair way to classify some schools, but they really didn't do that. So anything stand out with, and you'll get into the specific examples here with some of our local schools that are impacted with the fixed enrollment cutoffs.
Yeah, I think it's never going to be a perfect solution. I mean, it just is so hard because every school is different in terms of, you know, whether it's public, private, and just kind of the demographics with each school district or each, you know, private school or whatever. But I think that this is a little bit, I mean, it's a step in the right direction, I think, because there'll be less of, like you said, if there's any limited success for anybody. So like in the four class sports, if a private school wins a sectional semifinal game over a three-year period, those 3 years, they'll have the multiplier. Same thing. And then in football, it just is one playoff win over 3 years. It used to be three playoff wins in 2 years. Now it's just one playoff win in 3 years. So like you said, the days of like the football playoffs, I mean, that'll be completely wiped out in terms of really the multiplier in the football playoffs for the most part, I think, in terms of the private school programs that are traditionally really, really strong. But locally, looking at those enrollment cutoffs, like you said, for the four class sports, so baseball, softball, volleyball, and then boys and girls basketball, 300 students or less in the 1 year enrollment cycle is what will be the 1A, 2A cutoff. So Orion, their enrollment for next year is going to be 281, which is what they'll be classified at. So they'll be 1A in the four class sports. Some other schools that have changed from 2A down to 1A locally, Bureau Valley at 295, Knoxville at 279, and then United kind of creeping up towards 2A. They're at 294. The other one interesting, though, is Allman. If they get the waiver, they're at 285, and they would be eligible for the waiver in boys basketball and volleyball, not in girls basketball. And if they don't win a sectional semifinal game in baseball and softball, they would be eligible in those sports as well.
So I know one of our listeners, so what if Jeff Schmolbach gets five wins?
Yeah, they'd be in 1A
with
probably.
The Pioneers in the fall, so it'd be...
But you wouldn't know until the football qualifiers, but they would be close to 1A in football if
at
they were getting...
At 285, yeah.
Yeah.
That
would be wild.
So it'd be Allman in the first round taking on, what, Anawan-Weathersfield maybe, something
but,
like that?
But with their lack of success, like in boys basketball, I expect them to get the waiver if they apply for it, Allman. I mean, I would think they'll be 1A in boys basketball next year, which is just absolutely crazy. And then some other schools locally, just like the other local schools we cover enrollment numbers. Riverdale next year will be 321, so they're kind of close. Rock Ridge at 330, Mercer County 411, Sherrard at 450, which puts them right as the biggest school in 1A track and field in boys and girls, and then Monmouth Rose was at 483. So, but I think the big story, Orion, with what the talent they have in boys basketball being in 1A, they have a chance for a really special run next year, I think. And then volleyball, I mean, they're a power, winning regional titles in 2A every year, it feels like. Them dropping down to 1A, I think for those two sports especially, really gives them a chance to have some pretty special runs in the postseason, I would think.
Yeah, and again, the information is available at IHSA.org, because there's a lot of information to consume. And, you know, we get rolling in these seasons, and sometimes we forget. It's like, now, hey, what is in play here for these non-boundary schools? But so if you know, even if, Ty, if you don't fall under these categories for the waiver, you still have to apply for it?
You have to apply for it now. It used to be automatic. Now you have to apply for it.
So there's a little subjectivity from the IHSA. That's going to be interesting.
They said the way they'll do it is it's when schools apply for the waiver, they will take the school name off and have a vote by the IHSA administrative staff, I believe. And it's just a simple majority if they will get it or not.
Boy, that's going to be... That'll be pretty interesting following that storyline.
So it's basically a blind vote of you don't know who the school is, but yeah.
So for example, then even if Alleman hasn't had success in football, so next year they would have to apply for the waiver then.
Yes, it's not. Automatic.
If they make the playoffs,
it's not automatic. You have to apply for it. Yeah.
Yeah, that to me that puts even more pressure kind of on the IHSA. But again, we can always debate these subjects because I don't think there's no clear-cut answer. And now I'm assuming it now the angle is, hey, you're just out to get non-boundary schools. Now that's that there's always where's the compromise, and maybe this is the closest thing to compromise. But it's always interesting too, you know, and we always see it with the football playoffs because we're always so sensitive here. Since we've been doing the football playoff show, it's the enrollment classification cutoff. We're always worried about, you know, especially with the 8 class, we're going to be 2A or 3A, or we're going to be 1A or 2A. And to me, that's always interesting, you know, now with the hard cutoff at 300, you know, you're so close to, if you're 299, you're playing under 300. Then if you're, you know, just 3 students more, you're competing against schools up to 700, which I think is always an interesting storyline. And then you go from, you know, 700 to 1600 for
that's a huge range. 3A.
Holy smokes, that's what I'm saying too. But we really don't have any local schools close to 700 students anymore, and I'm shocked at how close some of our schools are really getting to that 1A.
Yeah, like Rock Ridge is 30 away from the 1A, and Riverdale's only 21 away. But I mean, what do you think about Orion being in 1A? Don't you think, like, boys basketball? I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead of
and
myself.
And volleyball.
But in those sports, I mean, I think they've got a legit chance. I mean, in boys basketball next year, I don't think it's out of the question, you know, if they're able to stay healthy and everything, that they could maybe be a Final Four team in 1A boys basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I didn't realize their enrollment was dropping like that under 300 students. And then, you know, if they're able to pick up, you know, 5 wins in football, they're going to be a 1A. Oh, yeah. I would think they're going to be a 1A team in football next year too. But then a sport like volleyball, where they've had great success. And then the other thing we think about too is with these adjustments, how does that impact, you know, our postseason alignments in all these 4-class sports?
It's interesting because I was going to bring that up too, because like the local sub-sectionals are, you know, I mean, traditionally Knoxville has been in them. They're now in 1A. Orion has always been in there, obviously. They're now in 1A. So you're losing a couple of those schools. And Alleman, you know, if they get wavered down, they traditionally are in the subsectional complex, and they'll be out of it now too, where you'll see some shifting, I think, of course. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how those maps are drawn up for the first time with this new enrollment cycle, where all the, you know, subsectional lines are and who gets sent where. Because I think it's interesting, like, speaking specifically about maybe boys basketball, for example, like Orion, I think going in to next year in the subsectional probably was going to be the best team. I mean, I would think going into the year. So they're now out of it. And then the two worst teams were going to be Knoxville and Alleman, probably. And they're out of it too. So it just kind of brings everybody closer together, I think, if everybody stays together again, which, you know, remains to be seen. So that'll be a story to follow for sure, what the subsectional complexes end up looking like. I don't think we'll know that till about like midway through the basketball season next year, but it'll be interesting to follow that for sure.
Well, and I guess the thing on the girls basketball side, though, is we don't, you know, the last couple of years had to worry about the juggernaut Peoria Notre Dame. We don't have to worry about them
anymore. They'll be 3A.
So, I mean, that's good on the girls basketball side. But then Orion, you know, the volleyball storyline, I think, is important to follow, too, where they've always had great success in that sport. Now, has there been, you know, on the Twitter sphere, what's been the reaction like statewide? Have you heard much one way or the other with these, you know, enrollment classification policy moves by the IHSA?
I think by and large, people have been pretty positive. I mean, who knows how long that'll last once it's actually implemented and being used in practice. But I mean, I think people who, you know, were upset about some of the private school classifications, I mean, are happy with how the process has been updated. And I thought they needed to, and we're definitely going to, after what happened in the football playoffs. I mean, that was just crazy, where I think that really caused them to look at, okay, this system is broken a little bit. And I think they did, you know, as good of a job as they can, because like we talked about last week, it's not a one size fits all thing where you can't just like put a Band-Aid on everything. And so I like what they did. And I think by and large, it's been pretty positively received.
Yeah. It's always interesting though, when I think about, you know, just class expansion in high school sports. And I remember, you know, in football, when they expanded the classification and the number of teams that qualified, even in the 6-class system, then they expanded to the 8-class system. And I remember the argument was, well, that'll cure all the scheduling problems. You know, it didn't. It just added to them. And then even, you know, with the 4-class system with all the other sports, you know, giving more schools the opportunity to compete for a state title, you know, I just think the crescendo of the 4-class sports, the last year, and it's, you know, especially with football is the motivator of everything, the magnificent controversy that was created this past year, and we're talking about 8-class football, you know, with so many teams that qualify. But that was the most significant pushback in this public-private debate in the history of the IHSA. Mind you, with what the scores were this year, that led to most of that. But I always think that when I look back originally, we won't have much of this public-private debate when we expand classes or with football add teams to the playoff field. That should eliminate that. And, you know, lo and behold, it's created a whole new set of problems that we continue to debate every year. But I'm just curious to see what the next big issue is going to be in the public private debate. And I think most of it has to do with getting the non-boundary schools out of small school classes. I mean, that's where you hear most of the pushback.
So you and Brian Ruscha talk about this a little bit more coming up. We haven't mentioned our other guest this week yet, but we're going to be joined by Kendra Lewis, who is the University of Wisconsin. Or I should say she was the Big Ten Freshman of the Week in softball after a big week for Wisconsin in a series win over Illinois in Champaign last weekend. She was 6-for-11 in that series with 3 home runs and I think 8 RBI. At the time of the award, she was hitting over 400 with 3 homers and 18 RBI in the season. She's been pitching this season as well for them. So a great start for her. Been pretty cool to follow her initial, you know, run at Wisconsin so far this season.
Yeah, and especially doing it in Champaign is so crazy and good for her. And I don't think, you know, it's surprising for you to see that with the level she, you know, you look at Rock Ridge. And I know softball's more of a sport. What are the numbers with your travel ball team? But the way Rock Ridge scheduled over the 4 years she played there, I mean, they played the top-notch competition throughout the state. And then, you know, with her high-level travel softball she played, I mean, I don't think it's really a surprise. And did she say, you talk, and we'll hear the interview from her coming up, but I mean, they're expecting to have a pretty good year.
I think so.
Wisconsin,
they're off to a good start. I mean, they're playing in Oklahoma City this week against both, I think, Purdue and Michigan, I think, are their opponents down there at the College World Series field. So Yeah, they've been off to a decent start. I think, you know, she'll talk about it, but she said their big goal is to qualify for the tournament. So hopefully they can do that.
Well, just crazy that though she hits three home runs.
Yeah.
In the opening series, and it's played in Champaign.
She likes playing in Illinois, I guess.
Yeah, it's so crazy that another, because like I told somebody, I think like Hap was like 7-1 when he was at Illinois, yeah. Rock Ridge Kids.
So. No, when he was at Wisconsin against Illinois. Yeah,
Wisconsin at Illinois. So yeah, that's great to catch up with her, and it'll be great to follow her throughout the rest of this spring. And man, what a way to start in,
yeah,
Champaign.
Awesome. Awesome. So we can get to that interview here momentarily. And then again, you and Brian Roosh will be back to talk a little bit more about this classification enrollment policy update from the IHSA. So excited to get to hear Kendra Lewis.
Yeah. And then, too, you know, the big storyline with the 1A, 2A, then Pecatonica, who didn't get to the state tournament in basketball, they'll be 2A.
Correct.
Next year. And, of course, DuPec, they co-op for football, and they'll be in the Big Northern Conference next year. You know, the other thing, and maybe we'll hear a little bit more about this as the school year winds down, really haven't heard a lot about, you know, conference affiliation stuff here late in the school year. So maybe things are calming down, but I doubt it.
Hopefully. We were at the state tournament trying to get McCone to get into the track.
Yeah, and then it was nice to be able to get out and do one spring sports game.
Yep,
this week saw the Golden Eagles pick up a nice win over A-Town, and trying to figure out, I think, you know, the at least 2A still runs probably through Rock Ridge. They've lost a lot, we know that, and it looks like Sherrard is going to want to contend for that in Mercer County, and we'll wait and see. Well, and then, of course, Ridgewood has had the state championship from last year.
I think in baseball and softball in the track west, Sherrard and Rock Ridge probably the two best teams in both. And I think they play twice in each sport right off the bat in the conference season. I think it's the first week of April or maybe the second week of April. So those will be interesting results to follow early in the conference season.
And if Glenn Cook is listening today, you think he is or
maybe
not? I've always said this to him, and he agrees with me.
He probably didn't know we were starting at 8,
yeah,
though.
And I just wish, and I know there's a reason why they do it with the weather, but I just don't like, you know, the same series where you play the Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday, whatever it is in the league, where you play those conference games with the same opponent in the same week. I just wish it was a little bit different, like it is in basketball and volleyball, where you get to play them early and then you get to play them late. That's my argument. I would like to see that, but that's just me.
A lot of the times you end up doing that anyway because the game's got to be rescheduled.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying you can, you know, like we know during basketball, you know, what does a team look like in the basketball season early compared to late?
Right.
It's different.
Yeah.
And then that has a, with the schedule, that to me has a pretty significant impact on postseason seeding in baseball,
yeah,
and softball if you're playing them twice early in the season and it's not split.
Right. I agree. So, all right. Well, we can talk more about that maybe in a show coming up, but we got to get to Kendra Lewis because we're running out of time. So we'll come back and hear from Kendra Lewis, and then the Jim and Brian segment will dive more into this IHSA enrollment classification policy update. We're at the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios on Sportsline. We'll come back and hear from University of Wisconsin freshman and Big Ten freshman of the week, Kendra Lewis, after this on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, anybody buy him here?
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your feet will thank you.
And this is Ty Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com, getting a chance to talk with Rock Ridge grad and University of Wisconsin freshman softball player Kendra Lewis, the reigning Big Ten Freshman of the Week from the past week. So Kendra, really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us. How have things been going up in Madison so far for you in the 2025 season?
Hi, thank you so much. Yeah, they're going amazing here. I mean, the university has been exactly as what I expected. The atmosphere is amazing. And the softball program, my teammates are beyond my best friends or my sisters. I mean, it just can't get much better.
Well, I want to start with kind of a great story, I thought. So you were playing, obviously, in Champaign over the weekend against Illinois, and the IHSA boys basketball state finals were going on this past weekend, too, down on the campus of the University of Illinois. And I ran into Tom and Katie Hassan one day down at the basketball state finals, and Tom Hassan had told me it was the day you hit your first home run in the first game of that series. He's like, hey, did you know Wisconsin's down here and Kendra's playing? And I was like, no, I had no idea. And he goes, yeah, I'm going to get over there and go watch her. So I think he did end up going over to watch you play at least one game against Illinois. So I guess, do you still feel that kind of local Rock Ridge Rocket love as you've started your career at Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, our first Big Ten play being in Illinois was really special. It was a hometown, and then on top of it, IHSA being there, too. I mean, it kind of was like, wow, it's like we're back in high school, and I came to watch our boys play state, and it was just such a special moment to know, like, I have, like, a whole entire army of a community behind me. You know, I hit my first home run, and I had so many people calling, texting. It was just so special.
Yeah, so Big Ten Freshman of the Week honors for you, kind of your first collegiate award or recognition here in your freshman season. So just how did that feel, kind of seeing that release from the Big Ten saying, hey, Kendra Lewis is the Big Ten Freshman of the Week? I'm sure that was a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, so I found out because my coach texted me and she said, hey, congratulations, you're Big Ten Freshman of the Week. And the first thing I did was I turned to my teammate and I told her, and she was just so happy for me. And that just kind of was, I took a moment and I was like, wow, like, this is so special. I've worked so hard to get here. And not just that, I have such an amazing community and teammates and so many other people that have helped me get to this moment that we all have worked so hard for. And it was like, to finally see it being recognized is like so special.
Well, I think it's really cool, too, that kind of you get the honor on the back of a big week playing against Illinois in Champaign at the state school that you grew up in. You go 6-for-11, I think, in the series, 3 home runs, 8 RBIs. So did it feel any more special maybe having a performance in a series like that against Illinois, you know, playing in the state you grew up into in the first conference series for you in your collegiate career?
Absolutely. I mean, being in my home state, I had so many people, family, friends go to that game. So again, I just felt so supported. And to be able to do that well with, you know, the help that's been provided here at Wisconsin and in the past, it was just so special to, you know, be in my hometown. And my coach recognized that. And I was just so happy. And I'm so excited for what the season has to come.
Well, it's not just, you know, the past week where you've got hot. I know really the first month of the season has gone really well for you, especially at the plate. I think hitting up over 400, 3 home runs, 18 RBI. You've been hitting kind of in the middle of the lineup for Wisconsin as a true freshman, too. So what do you think has led you to such a good start here to your career at Wisconsin, you think?
I would say there's a lot of things built up. I mean, from transitioning from summer ball, high school ball, now to college, it's a huge step. I was kind of prepared going in from both travel and high school, but my teammates, especially the upperclassmen, have really like helped guide us freshmen through the way, and it's just been so helpful with their advice and their leadership. So it makes it a little bit easier of a transition for sure.
And speaking more about that transition, I know, you know, we've talked a lot about what you've been doing at the plate. You've also been pitching at Wisconsin to start the season, too. And I know that's something you're familiar with, obviously, doing it at Rock Ridge and, like you said, on the travel circuit, too. But doing it there as opposed to doing it, you know, as a true freshman in a high major Division I softball program, I'm sure, like you touched on there, it's been a little bit of a transition. So you just kind of walk us through how you've been able to handle that kind of step up in where now, you know, every batter you face, 1 through 9 pitching, is a Division I player. And then, you know, when you're hitting, you're facing Division I pitching every time. So just kind of the jump in competition there and how you think you've been able to handle that so far.
Yeah, I would just say just trust in the preparation, and that's all you can do. We worked so incredibly hard here, practicing every single day, grinding. You know, we expect nothing less but amazing. So when we have to practice so hard, we get to go to games and it's all fun. And you move preparation for this moment of high Division I level. And I would even say Rock Ridge has prepared me again for the long hours of practicing. Travel ball has prepared me with the high level pitching and hitting. So all of it kind of combined has really prepared me for, you know, the season.
Yeah, so overall, team-wide for Wisconsin, I think a 2-1 start in the Big Ten, took 2 of 3 against Illinois over the weekend, and then 18-9 on the season. So it looks like a pretty successful start for you team-wide. Just overall, what have kind of the expectations been for, you know, Wisconsin this season, and do you think you've kind of met them or exceeded them yet so far?
We're definitely on the right track, for sure. Our goal is to make it to the NCAAs. Again, kind of similar philosophy to Rock Ridge softball. Was our goal every single year was to make it to the state tournament, and whatever, however we got there, we got there. Kind of same philosophy with the NCAAs. We work every day, go to practice, grind, show up to games, and just, you know, play fierce. That's all our coach asks for is, you know, we go out there in a dogfight, and as long as we work for it, it's what our goal is.
Well, speaking about kind of that Rock Ridge background a little bit more, obviously, you know, like you touched on there, you were at the state tournament all 4 years. You were in high school, 3 state championships, 4 state trophies. And I know each season you really saw that program, you know, challenge itself in terms of the strength of schedule you played throughout the regular season, you know, both with, you know, John Nelson and then Scott Durbin your senior year as the head coach. You're just kind of speaking about maybe more the culture of playing softball at Rock Ridge. I mean, a lot of kids talk about how it almost feels like you're playing for a collegiate program in high school. You've seen so many kids have collegiate success, with some of them, of course, being all the way up to the Division I level like yourself. So, I mean, just through that, I mean, how much of a help was that making this transition to playing at the University of Wisconsin here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being fortunate enough to play at Rock Ridge and an amazing program with amazing coaches and teammates, it kind of installed this winningness in me and this fight to, you know, to win, and the competitiveness that's already kind of installed in me, and the hard work and effort that we put into every single practice has kind of prepared me for college. I mean, college is a little more intense for sure, but it definitely gave me a step in the right direction.
I think, too, one thing I wanted to ask you about is obviously, you know, this is the first year where you see the expanded Big Ten with kind of those West Coast teams getting in, where I know there's so much more travel now, and you haven't got all the way into the full swing of conference play yet. But, you know, playing at the collegiate level, so different. I feel like you talked about, there's so much travel, still having to stay on top of schoolwork and everything. So just kind of the grind of being a Division I softball player, both mentally and physically. Can you kind of walk us through that aspect of it for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So us being so far up north in the Big Ten, and it's a difficult conference. I mean, our schedule is, we're 7 weeks on the road, and honestly, it's hard. It's not something that you can really get prepared for. And, you know, balancing schoolwork and athletics is definitely a difficult task, but we have provided so much resources here, and our coaches are so supportive. It makes it a lot easier. But now we're kind of inching closer to the home games, home series, and I'm getting a little antsy. I mean, on the road's fun, but playing at Goodman is going to be a completely different level of excitement.
Yeah, just kind of looking at the schedule for you, obviously your first, you know, experience getting to go through all this, you know, Division One softball type stuff. So looking at kind of the schedule, I mean, anything that you're really looking forward to maybe experiencing, maybe an opponent that you get to play or have played already, or maybe a facility you get to play at? I mean, what are some things you're looking forward to getting to experience your freshman year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we kind of talked about it being an expanded Big Ten now. And one of the games that we're fortunate enough to play is at Washington in Seattle. And I never kind of envisioned myself playing at Washington, but once I saw that on the schedule, it kind of hit me like, wow, we're going to Seattle and I'm going to play the University of Washington. And that is such an experience, I think. I've never been there. Really cool. And another one that's also really exciting is tomorrow we leave for Oklahoma and we get to play at the World Series field and play both Michigan and Purdue. And I think that's just going to be such a cool experience to be able to play on the field and play two amazing opponents.
All right. And then really, as we wrap up with you, I wanted to ask you just about, you know, we've talked about Rock Ridge a little bit. The IHSA spring sports season, the first week of games is this week. So I guess Kendra Lewis up in Madison, Wisconsin, how closely you think you're going to follow the Rock Ridge Rockets this year and some of your former teammates playing?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely with my busy schedule. I'll try to check in as much as possible, but I'm going to be rooting for them this season, hoping they're doing good. I see that they play their first game, I believe, on Friday or Saturday.
Should be a fun season for the Rockets, of course, a great softball heritage there. And one of the big pieces of that is Kendra Lewis, who's off to a great start at the University of Wisconsin up in Madison. The Big Ten Freshman of the Week this week, Kendra Lewis, appreciate the time and good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.
All right, I'm Ty Taylor on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it. Because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your feet will thank you.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Roush at WCCI in Savannah. He's Jim Taylor at WRMJ in Aledo. And we're Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio. And Jim and I both had a chance to enjoy America's original March Madness with a visit to the state tournament last weekend. And now we have some IHSA legislation coming out that's going to impact all the sports. Jim, let's talk about those recent findings at the March board meeting.
Yeah, well, before we talk about that, interesting, though, because Eastland, so this last weekend, who you cover, finished state runner-up in the 1A boys basketball tournament. They lost to Hope Academy, a non-boundaried school, It was a rematch of a regular season game that Eastland won, I think, back in December or January. So I'm curious, first up, Brian Roush, have you heard any pushback from the people of Eastland upset about playing a non-boundaried school in the state championship game? Or is it, you know, basically, hey, we beat them in, you know, the regular season and lost to them in the rematch?
Yeah, I think they kind of, you know, ignore that if they're concerned about it or they fail to mention it. They're more, you know, excited and proud about their team. And they kind of figured they, you know, that the second time around would be especially difficult. And, you know, I keep hearing kind of the same thing. The better team won, and how we beat them back in December, we're not 100% sure. But, yeah, if there are complaints about, you know, their status, I haven't heard any.
So we saw, you know, of course, the significant pushback after the state football championship games with the non-boundaried or parochial schools winning by a wide margin. So I think that kind of set up the decision that took place with the March board meeting. Now, I think it calmed down a little bit because Althoff lost the 2A state title basketball game. But then, you know, I heard a little criticism with a school from Chicago won the 2A state title game. But here's what the IHSA decided. They looked at three things moving forward. They moved back to fixed classification cutoffs. Now, back in the day, it was basically percentage of schools would be in 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A in the four-class sports. Now they're fixed cutoffs again, so up to 1A, 300, and then the 2A, 3A cutoff at 700. So the hard cutoffs there, I know there's probably going to be some impacts moving into next year. That's the four-class sports. And then the multiplier, the waiver process, to me, really, I don't think there's going to be a waiver for the multiplier because how this is set up in girls volleyball, boys basketball, girls basketball, again, basically kind of the four-class sports. If you win an IHSA sectional semifinal contest and you're a non-boundaried schools, you cannot have the multiplier waived, so you're going to have to play with the 1.65 multiplier. And then in football, if you just win at least one IHSA playoff football game over 3 years, you're not going to be able to get that multiplier waived. And then the success factor that they talk about, this is based on kind of a rolling three-year period where if you win a state trophy, now a state trophy is defined as first place through fourth place over a three-year period, you're going to be bumped up a class. So that's the moves the IHSA has announced, I guess, to not eliminate, but impact, I guess, the number of non-boundaried schools that potentially could get, you know, basically to the state tournament and win a trophy. So long story short, a lot of different things, and I know we'll always have to look back as we enter each school year and say, now, hey, what's in play again with these non-boundaried schools? So a lot of different things, but I guess what do you think?
They're trying to address the issue, and I think that's probably a good idea, and they can always go back and revisit it. You know, I know there's some people out there that still say it should be, you know, private and public. That's not going to ever happen. So I think, yeah, you just have to try to, you know, tweak it and see what you can do to make things a little fairer for the, you know, traditional public schools.
Well, and I guess long story short, is it the answer? I don't know what, you know, is there going to still be some problems? And I guess, to me, it always boils down to this. If a non-boundaried school is having no success, but then they have success, right? That's when, especially when we're talking about those small school classes in football, it's 1A, 2A. And then basically in the four-class system, it's 1A, 2A. If you see a non-boundaried school, even if they haven't had prior success during that school year, if they go on to win whatever state title, that's when you hear the criticism. And I think, too, the other thing that's interesting for me, I'm torn on the enrollment classification cutoffs with a fixed number. I did kind of like that the percentage of schools with the enrollment cutoff there, because I think too the, you know, the wiggle room for those schools, Brian, if you're at 302, right? There's a big difference from, you know, playing schools that have 700 kids in the postseason as opposed to if you're at 299 or 300 and playing schools under 300. So again, it's always those kind of cutoff lines to me where that's where people can kind of get aggravated and say, hey, we're just, you know, come on, we're just two students away from being maybe 1A instead of 2A, right? We always see those type of debates. And I don't, this, you know, these type of things, I guess, really never fix that when we talk about the enrollment cutoffs.
Yeah, those are excellent points. And, you know, that flexibility probably was kind of nice, and now that's kind of taken away. But, yeah, I think that it's good to address it, but will we have to come back a year from now, or will the IHSA board have to come back a year from now? Maybe so.
Yeah, and I think it's still going to be an issue that's going to be debated. I don't know what the answer is. I'm vehemently opposed to separate public and private school state championships, but you can see all the information on the classification issue at IHSA.org. He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I'm Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Aledo. This is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your fee will thank you.
Well, that'll do it for the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning. They are actually physically pushing us out of here because there's all kinds of stuff going on with bid for bargains here in the 9 o'clock hour.
I just hold pizza back there for me.
All right. Great with Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. For Ty Taylor, I'm Jim Taylor. This is the WRMJ Sportsline.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots, and by Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.